I would like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Nancy.
All right, Nancy.
Hi, everybody. My name is Nancy, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Nancy.
I'm a little bit nervous, so bear with me. I'm just really glad to be here. I'm so glad to be here in this room. I'm glad to be in this program. I'm glad to be present in my own life. I didn't used to be. For a long time, I wasn't. They say tell what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. First, I want to welcome the newcomers. I hope you stick around. This is such a good life. It's an unimaginably good life. Not every day is good, but life is good. I grew up in a family, four kids, mom and dad. Dad worked, mom was at home with us, busy with her church stuff. She was ill sometimes, and I was supposed to have a twin. She miscarried my twin, and she was ill a lot when I was little. But she did a lot for us. She took us places, museums, and crafts, and stuff like that. I remember a lot of good things from my childhood. I did not have an unhappy childhood when I was little. My dad, I don't remember a lot about it. My dad made beer and wine with my uncle, and I remember that. I remember that my uncle's garage. They lived back to back with us, and I remember those times because they'd give us a little bit, and I'd get a little bit more and a little bit more. I remember that. I remember the taste of it. I remember even when it tasted really bad, I liked the feeling. And then I didn't. Then I didn't drink for a long time after my. I moved away. I didn't move away. My uncle passed away, I guess, before then. And then I stayed pretty straight for a while. I had a boyfriend who was a long-haired redneck, I guess, and he didn't drink or anything else. So if I was with him, I was pretty straight. I broke up with him when I was 18, though, and I kind of went crazy. I had a wild, wild summer, and I learned to drink, and I learned to use other substances, and I ran myself into the ground in those 3 months, and I came begging to have, you know, just come back and land somewhere where I could feel safe, because I ended up very much not safe. And the insanity of it scared me, and I stayed straight again for another 2 years. But then, for other reasons, I broke up with him, and it was on. And I was 20 then, and the summer I was 18, I hung out some at the near neighborhood bar. They would let women in when they were 18, and they'd stamp our hand different so that we wouldn't drink, right? So they really liked me. The owner liked me because I never drank. I never tried to drink in the bar. But I'd go out in the parking lot and drink. And I'd go out in the parking lot, and whatever was there, I'd do that. And I had a good time. And I learned that I liked the way I felt when I drank. I was, when I was growing up, I was pretty quiet, I think. I had friends, the neighbors were my friends, my brothers and sisters, we were all close. And then I think it was about when I was, the nearest I could pinpoint is when I was 11 or 12, because I know it was 12 when I smoked cigarettes with my neighbor's cousin up in the pepper tree. They had a little fort up there, and We were smoking cigarettes up there. So I know I was still hanging out with them then. But then there was an incident where their mom came home and found out her tip jar. She was a waitress. And she put the tips in this tall jar all the time. And she came home and, oh, the kids would, her four daughters would take the money out and take it to the, you know, the ice cream man or the local store. And she didn't know that until one day she found out. And for some reason, they put it on me and said I did it. And it was a big court martial with my parents and their parents and the other neighbor's parents and all the kids. And I was like on trial, and I didn't do it. And I was saying, I didn't do it. My mom was saying, if you did it, you can tell me. And I didn't do it. But I felt so betrayed. And these were friends. This is where I grew up. I trusted my family. I trusted my friends. And all of a sudden, everything was turned upside down, and I couldn't trust anybody. And it kind of turned me inward. I got real, I didn't care about the world. I didn't care about anybody else. I didn't care about, I just put my head down and did what I had to do. I was still going to church. I was raised Catholic, and when I was 12, I heard the priest say something that totally contradicted the way let's just say that it made me wonder how they could teach one thing and act another, and that's how I felt, and I got up and walked out and didn't go back. I tried to go with some friends to their churches. I had some people at my school that I hung out with, and this is what I heard everywhere I went. You come to our place and do what we say, or you're going to hell. And then after I couldn't even use the word God. To me, God equaled religion, and religion equaled control. And I'd had enough of control. My mom became pretty controlling. She had four of us and three girls entering adolescence at the same time, pretty much. And so I can look back now and see she was so scared. You know, she was from a much earlier generation, and she was almost 40 when I was born, and she didn't talk to us about anything. She didn't really teach us anything because she didn't want us to take it and run with it. Well, the opposite happened. You know, we found out ourselves, and we wanted to know, so we took it and ran with it without her. I thought that there should be something in the world. I started seeing a lot of the negative things in the world. Wars and poverty and disease and starving people all over. And I started thinking that people weren't what I had thought they were, you know, what... I just started thinking everybody was not, nobody was living the way I thought people should care about each other and should take care of each other and should help each other. And I thought, it's not like that. It's not at all. I took off when I was 20, lived up in Oregon, lived here and there. I never felt real comfortable wherever I went. Until I got to the bar, I found the local bars. I even lived next door to one for a while in Portland, and that was convenient. I did a lot of what we call geographics now, but you know what they say: wherever you go, there you are. And there I was, and I always would end up bumping my head again against a wall, and over the years, I did, you know, what I was looking for was meaning. I was looking for meaning in life. What's the meaning of life? And I couldn't find it. And everywhere I went, you know, I'd work a little bit, I'd save up a little money, and then I'd travel on. And I didn't want to get close to anyone because I still had that trust issues with people. And I never got better. I was like, wherever I went, my life was, I'd get a little bit worse and a little bit lower level. And I came back here and, I was having trouble with drinking. I would end up, in situations I didn't want to be in with people I didn't want to be around, and in some really, really scary situations. I look back now and I think, wow, how did I get out of that alive? I mean, I was hanging out with bikers, a lot, you know, I was hanging out with, people who were, cooking dope, and we were all drinking and doing, it was insane. My life was insane. I was always hanging off the edge of the cliff. And when I needed help, you know, I there were very few people around who would help me. You know, it's like a fend for yourself you know, live however you can kind of life. And there's a sense of that you're hanging out with the people I was hanging out with the people who I got along with and that they were my friends. But when I started getting in trouble, they weren't there. And I ended up living in a shed and then I lived in another shed that was even worse. No electricity, no water. I figured out how to stop drinking when I didn't want to drink anymore. When I'd bump my head so hard that I'd think I got to stay away from that. My method of not drinking was to use other substances. So that just, you know, I started spiraling down and until I was using everything, and just that insanity, that incomprehensible demoralization. I had a son. I got married to a guy who wasn't the father, and kind of leveled out a little bit until life isn't fun. I mean, I was okay with having a baby. I loved him. But I was really eager to get back to the bars, to get back to my bottle, to get back to my other stuff because I thought life was no fun without it. And consequently, I ended up dragging him through most of my disease. The rest of my disease. It did get worse and worse. And my son and my ex and I ended up living in my car. I feel blessed now that I had a car still. It was a 1965 Chevy Impala, two-door super sport hardtop. It could have been a nice car. It was kind of rusted around the edges. You know, the weather stripping was gone, and it had dents in every panel from the lady I got it from. But it was a classic car, and it just didn't really make that classic of a house to live in for three people. My son, my parents kept trying to help me, and they'd let me move in. They'd let me bring him along, whoever him was at the time. And Because, you know, I'd be living in the canyon in a tent and getting sick. Or I'd be sleeping in the car and getting sick. Or I'd be, I'd be staying in a place that wasn't safe. And and they'd say, oh, come and, you can bring him along with you. You know, because they cared about me and they cared about my son, their grandson. But I always ended up doing this right here at their place, hiding bottles around and having dangerous people coming over that I think, God, how could I have let those people into the house? You know, it's because they had what I wanted and they were that my kind of people, you know, and it's you guys now. Only different. I finally had enough. My parents helped us get into an apartment. They couldn't stand us living in the trailer in the backyard anymore. And they said, you know, we'll help you get an apartment if you promise to keep it. And I promised to keep it because I wanted to get out of there too. I didn't like being that close under their magnifying glass. You know, my mom wanted to talk to me. She'd ring a little bell, you know, and I'm supposed to get out of the trailer and run up there. Well, you know, if I'm passed out on the bed I would listen to the bell and I'd look at the bottle or what, you know, I'm like, oh, just lock the door, you know. So they helped us get into this apartment. It was my ex and my son and I, and we were there 3 weeks when my son caused some mischief in the parking lot, and we got a 3-week notice. I'd been there 3 weeks. I had 3 more weeks there. And I couldn't do it anymore. I'd been spiraling down and down and down. I remember I was living in one of those sheds, and I had this like a vision. I was standing in the shed, thinking, "How the hell did I get here? Excuse me, how the heck did I get here?" It was a moment of clarity that I had, that I had meant to do something with my life, you know, it's something. I didn't know what. I'd meant to be, a different person than I was. I hadn't meant to be that alcoholic addict living in a shed with no electricity and no bathroom and no running water and my son was 2, I think, at the time, or maybe 5. I don't know. No, if it was that shed, he was about 2 and a half. My husband left, and I was in the shed with my little son, and I thought, how did I get here? How did I get here from this person who was looking for meaning, looking for magic, looking for whatever there was, and I had been on this search, and all of a sudden I realized I'd been just like looking in the mud for a long time, and I was going down the toilet, and my vision was of me like sliding down this hill, and I couldn't stop, and there was this bottomless chasm in front of me, and I couldn't see the bottom of it. And I looked across, and there was a hill on the other side, a mountain on the other side, and there was this little person going up. And I thought, that was supposed to be me. I don't know where that little person was going, but that was supposed to be me going uphill, not sliding downhill with no way to stop. It was a long time after that before I did stumble in here. And I stumbled into these rooms, and I thought, God, even if I never, ever have another fun moment in my life, I have to stop.
That's right.
That's pretty funny. I've had so much fun in the last years, I can't even tell you. I was not having fun anymore then. I was not having fun. But that was my thought when I got here. I thought I had to do it on my own. I'd never heard of this program. I never knew that there were people like me who were there but not there, who were alcoholics but not drinking. And when I crashed and I stopped in those 3 weeks, I just stopped. And somebody told me, you know, there's these meetings. and I went looking for them. There were some at a church nearby. So I'd go to the church at all kinds of hours. But nobody was ever there. I didn't want to go there on Sunday because that's not what I was looking for. But I was always, you know, I went looking. And then I found out there was a place closer to me. It's actually the Lakeside Hotel. It was a lot closer to me. And I went stumbling in there. And sometime right around then when I stopped is when I got pregnant again. And so here I was hanging on to this new thing. I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. I didn't know where I was going to go from there, but I knew I didn't want to live that way anymore. I had stood in the middle of a highway not long before that. And I still have this feeling that this, I know a bus was coming, and I know the bus was going. And I feel like it passed right through me. I must have not been in the road. But that's how I felt, like I wanted to stand in front of a bus. And I remember sitting on the floor of that trailer one night, just crying, and I was dragging a knife across my wrist. I didn't do it deep. I was just dragging it across, thinking, that's all it would take, just to stop. My life was painful. My ex was verbally and emotionally abusive. I was so ashamed and so filled with that incomprehensible demoralization. And when I first came in here, I didn't know what I was going to do, but I knew that I wanted something different. And I just started listening. I started out slow. I just go to meetings and listen. And I heard them say, get a sponsor. So I asked someone to sponsor me. And she took me through the first 3 steps. And I remember her telling me how willing I was. And I appreciated that. It made me feel like I had something. I didn't think I had anything left. But willingness was a good start. I was ready to be honest. And boy, was I open-minded, because nothing in my life was working. And I had to open my mind to something different. See, I was going to die this. I used to know someone. And I could picture her in my mind if I closed my eyes. She was about 76 then, and always had a bottle in her hand and a cigarette in the other hand. I don't know which hand was which, but that was me. I thought, that's going to be me. And I was proud of that idea, you know. I was going to die. Nobody was going to make me quit smoking. Nobody was going to take my bottle away from me or anything else. And I thought... regular, you know, life and work was for people who couldn't handle it. And one of the things that happened along the way was that when I, after I had my son, I went on welfare, and I was on welfare for 12 years, and I thought I didn't have time for work. I learned to go to all kinds of different meetings. I love the speaker meetings. I love to hear what people had to say, and I loved hearing. I learned. You guys taught me. If you're hearing somebody who sounds different, and you're listening to the differences, start listening for the similarities. Close your eyes and listen for the similarities. And then I started hearing them. Well, this sponsor who took me through the first three steps, she made sure I did them really thoroughly. And I didn't have a problem with the first one. I was powerless. I was powerless over alcohol. And I kind of came in, through the other program. But all of my sponsors, starting with her, pulled out the AA Big Book. And what I learned was that I was an alcoholic. That everything in my life had crumbled. When I became an alcoholic, you know, we go through those stages of having fun and being, you know, some of us, I don't know, I was pretty out of control when I first drank. But I learned deeply that I was an alcoholic. I didn't have any problem with that. And my life being unmanageable, well, that was obvious even to me. I can only think now how I looked to my family then. And they had tried to help me and tried to help me. And by that time, I think they finally realized they couldn't help me anymore. That I was off and running on my own path, and I had to finish my path out. But there was the God thing. And I got here, and somewhere along in my path, I had realized that even if I couldn't use the word God, there was something like magic or I don't mean like black magic or anything like that. I just mean like magic of the earth something. I started realizing that everything was connected. So that's what I brought in. I sure appreciate it when you guys told me that I could pick the God of my understanding, that it didn't have to be anybody else's God, that I didn't have to go back to any of those places I'd walked into and say, okay, what do I got to do? Because I came to an understanding, to a God of my own understanding. And I started being able to say the word God again. That was a big deal for me. You guys said you could, it's a higher power, the spirit of the universe, creator, whatever you, one guy, I think he called it Ralph. And, you know, to me, it's kind of like everybody in here has their own, whether you have any conception of a higher power or not. Even if you don't, you still, that means you have some kind of conception of, you know, even if it's a negative conception. But I look at it like this, like Like that joke about the story about the blind man and the elephant. Have you ever heard it? There's the blind man with the elephant, and one's got a hold of the leg of the elephant, and he says, "The elephant is like a tree." And the other guy has the trunk, and he said, "No, the elephant's like a snake, like a giant snake." And the other guy has the tail, and he says, "No, the elephant's like a rope." And they argue about that, what the elephant's like. But if we stand back and there's the eye of the elephant and we realize this is one creature, and to me, there's something over all of us that takes care of us. Whatever our conception of it or whatever we call it. And I look back and I think of the times that I walked away from situations that I could have died in, and I know something was always taking care of me and helping me learn what I needed to learn so that I could get here. I learned how to learn here. I had to learn how to learn because I was so numb and so dead to what life was and what there was, and to actually sitting down and reading the book, to writing, it was all, but I was willing to do whatever you guys told me to do, whatever my sponsor told me to do. Unfortunately, after 1, 2, and 3, my first sponsor said, "You know, I'm about to move, and I suggest you get someone else to move, to work with you, because I won't be able to anymore." So I got someone else to work with me. Well, she didn't move. She isolated and got really, really unhealthy. And I learned that there's different ways that our disease has all kinds of different manifestations. And I got someone else, and she was so patient with me for the fourth step. I remember saying, she showed me how to do it in the book, and I thought, well, that's kind of complicated. And I heard someone say at a meeting, I did the fourth step this way. And I went to her and I said, "I heard this way. Can I do it that way?" And she said, "Okay, Nancy." And I tried that way, and that was just weird. So then I heard someone else say a different way they did the fourth step. And I said, "I heard about this way. Can I try it that way?" "Okay, Nancy." I'm not kidding. There were at least, I don't know, 6 or 7 different ways that I tried to do the fourth step. And then I went back to her and I said, "Okay, how did you want me to do it again?" And she patiently went back to the book and showed me the columns again, and all of a sudden it made sense, and all of a sudden I started writing, and then it just started pouring out, and I was able to do my fourth step. Unfortunately, when I was ready to do my fifth step, she was not available, and said, "Well, in a couple of weeks." And she didn't tell me she was going through a really tough time, and that she was suicidal. And I learned how to be a sponsor from her and how not to be a sponsor from her. I think maybe that would have been important for her to say, "You know, I'm having a tough time right now. Why don't you get someone else to work with?" But I did that on my own. I couldn't wait for her. I was burning with my fifth step. You know, I was done with my fourth, and I needed to tell my fifth. And I got someone else to work with. And she had 25 years sober. And I was really impressed with what she said, and I asked her after the meeting, "Would you sponsor me?" And she said, "Oh, sure." I said, "Well, I've done my fourth step. I'm ready to do my fifth step." She said, "Do you have it with you?" I'm like, "Yeah." She says, "Well, bring it out." So I went to my car and got it, And right there outside the meeting, I told her, I did my fifth step with her. And then she said, okay, great. Now you're on your sixth step. And she told me the sixth step, and she said, okay, and now you just have to become willing. Are you willing? Okay, and the seventh step. Ask God, you know. She kind of bum-rushed me through the rest of the steps, standing right there. Right through 12, 5 through 12. I mean, it was like, once I finished my fifth step, it was maybe another half hour. And I thought, that's not the way I thought it was supposed to go. But thought she knew what she was doing. Well, I found out she had 25 years sober, but she'd just come into the program. And so she was kind of really eager to share her sobriety, but when I called her, her phone rang and rang, and then it was disconnected, and then I heard from someone else that she'd moved out somewhere. Oh, she didn't tell me. So I learned from her how to sponsor and how not to sponsor, because she was willing, and she listened really well to my fifth step, and helped me feel comfortable through that. So so I got someone else to work with. And I talked with her, and what we did was go back to the fifth, and she said, I know, she read, we went over my first, second, third, and then I did my fifth step with her, and then one step at a time I did the steps again. But I'd like to make the point that before I got that next person to work with, I was feeling pretty good. It was kind of funny, you know, because my mom used to say, the ways of the Lord are mysterious and wonderful. And I think of that now because, I don't know about your higher power, but mine has a really big sense of humor. And maybe a really good finds a fun in irony or something. But I got bum rushed through the steps, but then I had an ex come to town who was a really good guy, and I was able to make amends to him. I wouldn't have wanted to do that. I don't know. Because she'd told me in that little half hour we had that going through those steps that when you find someone you need to make amends with, you'll do it, right? Yeah, okay. So maybe if I hadn't got to there with her, I wouldn't have been ready to do that, make that amends with this person, and so that was kind of funny. So I found someone who was real patient with me. And I found that it worked, that I ran into someone who I had a terrible resentment against, someone who had taken advantage of a situation, taken advantage of me, not as a child, but as a young adult, and was able to see that person. And I was like, it was like I was, you know, checking myself, going, where is that? Where's that icky black stuff that I used to feel? Where's that, you know, crawling ball of worms that I used to feel when I think of this person? And it wasn't there anymore. It was really weird. There was this clear wind blowing through where that crawling ball of worms had been. And I thought, wow, this works. This stuff works. I had my baby. I'd had a terrible resentment against my sisters, my two sisters. because in trying to help me, they had called the authorities, and I don't think I spoke with either one of them for 2 years. And because this person bum-rushed me through the steps, even though I didn't get there the one at a time thing, I forgave them by the time my baby was born. And they were both there when she was born. The ways of the Lord are mysterious and wonderful. I learned the difference between humiliation and humility. Humiliation is what I felt before. It was that incomprehensible demoralization. It's still what I felt when I would go into a supermarket or something. Now, I've gone through the steps again. I have several sponsees. I work the steps with them. I love my life. I have a job I love. I love getting up in the morning. I was at this meeting, and I still learn something every day. At this meeting, someone shared that he says before he gets a chance to get into himself and out of control, he says, "I arise, O God, to do thy will." And I use that every day before I get up and get my coffee, and then by the time I get back and do the third step and the rest of my prayers. I've made direct amends and living amends, and my soul is clean. I just got in a horrible temper this morning with my 15-year-old daughter, and I had to make amends, but I know how to do that now. I found my right place in the world. Humble is your finding your right place and your right size in this world. I'm no greater than less than anyone else. I'm right here. I use open-mindedness, honesty, open-mindedness, a willingness, humor, wonder. When we say, I meant to bring the book up here, but you know the part in the book where it says, our sobriety is based upon we have a daily reprieve contingent on the thank you. The maintenance of our spiritual condition. Everything in my life depends on my sobriety. My sobriety depends on that. Means everything in my life depends on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. Why wouldn't I do that? You guys tell me, pass this along, why wouldn't I? Why wouldn't I stay in balance? Why wouldn't I keep this life in any way I could? I love my life. I go to work every day. People call it the rat race. I call it the rat dance. I embrace life. I give all I can. I trust the process. I believe that this works. I believe it works. It will work for any of you. All of you newcomers here, stick around. Life can be so good. You just got to learn to learn and find your place. I'm a senior citizen now. So I'm not a spring chicken anymore. I say I'm like a summer chicken or maybe a fall chicken. But I intend to keep doing this one day at a time for the rest of the time that I have. Thanks for letting me share.